Welcome to the Iced Tea Podcast, the podcast where we spill the tea on figure skating. My name is Megan.
I'm Netta. Hi, Megan. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Yeah, do you have all your teeth bones back?
Or, well,
no, that's not how that works, right?
No, I'm still down one bone, but I'm learning to live with it. My lisp is less annoying, I think. And yeah, I'm ready, I think.
All right, well, what are we ready to talk about this week?
Well, it's still the Grand Prix. We're still racing towards the final, which I heard a commentator, I can't remember which one, but one of the commentators was like, blah, 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 the final, which is next month. And then I was like, that's not correct. And I thought about it, and it is correct. It is. I don't know if you know this. It is mid-November right now, which sounds completely fake, but it's happening. So we're halfway through the Grand Prix series, and we are talking about the MK John Wilson Trophy, which is something that's never happened before, because the Grand Prix was in England for the first time. And this is the one that we're talking about here.
It sure was. And it gave birth to an existential crisis in me that I've sort of staved off, even though, like, MK John Wilson is, like, you know, a Blades company, mm-hmm. and I've known about it for a while. Because it's kind of inescapable if you're, you know, just a skating fan. Most skaters seem to use them. I have always thought in the back of my head, this disturbing thought that I've managed to stave off. But now it's been in my face so much with this Grand Prix event. And I feel like mm-hmm. there's no way, from a philosophical point of view, there's no real way to prove to me that the MK John Wilson Trophy is not just like the initials of whoever is hearing the name of the trophy, and it just like auto replaces somehow for you.
Oh,
so
God.
Like to you could be hearing it as the NV John Wilson Trophy.
Oh, and my God, like, and we would never know.
And yeah, and you would be here, yeah.
And we would never know.
This conversation itself, I think, might explode the universe if that was true. So,
yeah, I'm concerned. How do I not know that I've been saying the same thing every time and you're just hearing it the way you want to hear it and I'm hearing it? Wow. Fuck. Listeners, tell us the two letters that you hear when you hear the MK John Wilson Trophy.
Yeah, I mean, MK initial havers have already gotten so much from the world between, like, Michael Kors. We can just have, like, obnoxious monogrammed stuff. Michael Kors is expensive, but, you know, that's, like, built-in monogram. And now we have our own Grand Prix series event, which is very cool.
This is so exciting for y'all, but I can't know whether this isn't mine as well, because there is no way to know. This bit is deeply confusing. Also confusing for a lot of people was when it was first announced that there would be a Grand Prix event in the UK. The internet did what the internet does best, and there was a moment of like, LOL, why? And then there was a moment of like, LOL, why would you go to Sheffield? Because it sounds very random, I guess, to a person who's not familiar with like the importance of the city in, I guess, British figure skating. So a lot of people are very... The people are memeing on it, is what was happening. Which was, in hindsight, maybe not the best response, because it ended up being a pretty well-organized event. And most of it worked.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I think, I don't really know to this day why it was Sheffield, but at the same time, like, well, technically the skating club of Boston is in like Norwood, and so yeah. Anybody would just be like, why Norwood? There's nothing there. And it's like, well, the ice rink is there.
The ice rink is there. The case with Sheffield is that that's where the MK John Wilson, the John Wilson factory is, or I guess like the, I don't know if it's called a factory, that's where they make the John Wilson bleeds. And I've, in looking this up for this event, like you mentioned, most high-level figure skaters do use John Wilson blades, which is already interesting. But it's also interesting, I learned that they've been making figure skating or, like, skating blades as John Wilson, the company, since 1696. Which
so they're
is
far
centuries
older
ago.
Than the country. They're far older than America.
Oh, yeah.
As is everything in England.
Well, yeah, I don't even think that that's, like, impressive for them. But that's why Sheffield. And also, apparently, the city has two separate arenas, which one of them was used for, or, like, two separate rinks, which one of them was used for warm-up and exercise and all of that and practice. And the other one is Ice Sheffield, which is where the event took place. It's also where British Nationals happens most years. So for the home skaters, it was like a very familiar venue as well. And I guess we should just apologize, I guess, for memeing on Sheffield, because it was a very nicely organized event. I will say the camera work was insane for most of it, so maybe that's not ideal.
Yeah, the only thing I will apologize for, because I don't think I memed at all on that, because I didn't want to be exposed as not knowing anything about England, either way. So the only thing I apologize for is that I've been working for a very long time, and by that I mean like a week, on trying to come up with some sort of clever combination of like, "Oi, mister!" and "Mr. Sheffield," and like, I'm not quite there, and I just don't know if it can be done gracefully, but just know that I've been trying, and I'm sorry, I'll try to do better.
It's fine. This is a workshop. We're gonna workshop it and arrive at it. I'm not even gonna attempt a terrible British accent for this here episode, and y'all should be grateful, because I do have one, and it's profoundly offensive. So I'm just going to keep it to myself despite my best efforts. I can't remember which skater, but one of the skaters that does speak English but not as a native language did complain that they were having difficulty. I think it was Koshiro or someone was like, "Yeah, this is great, but I can't understand most of the natives here." Which is funny, because it's like Sheffield is like farther north than like if you were, I don't know, used to like the Queen's English from TV or something. Having said
I was going to say this has just been a couple of really British weeks in the circle of media that I consume, because the new episodes of The Crown came out, and then this happened, and then today, as of time of recording, I haven't seen it yet, but I think that the Bake Off finals happened and there is a winner. So I don't spoil it for me if you know. But yeah, it's been a big week for them. So.
A big week for just British people. This is a side note, and it doesn't need to be. This is not a discourse in any way, shape, or form. But I'm so happy for you and other people who can watch The Crown, because it looks like so much fun and drama and all of that. I don't get it. I don't understand why it has to be a show. And I have found it hard to stand it when I see it on the internet. It's just very confusing to me as a concept. But I'm glad that people are having fun. This sounds so shady. I just like genuinely don't understand why it exists.
No, look, I think for Americans anyway, like if you don't know a ton about the history there, like it's sort of interesting. And then as it gets into more recent seasons, it's been something that I've just been kind of watching from like a trashy slash like hate watching perspective. Mm-hmm. And also it's fun to see how they cast really attractive people as really unattractive people. That always makes me laugh. Like, so sorry to King Charles. Dominic West is like 400 times too handsome to play that role.
Yeah, because he's probably not severely inbred.
Yeah, and like no shade to inbred people if that's something that happens to you, but like I'm literally just shading like that particular inbred family because
fuck them.
Okay, but what I want to tell you about The Crown, the only thing you need to know about this season, shut your ears if you don't want any spoilers. It's like not really a spoiler in terms of it being a really big plot point, but it's a spoiler in terms of it being my favorite random inconsequential scene of the season.
Okay.
And it is in order to apparently like illustrate how like non-favorite childed Charles is. mm-hmm. at the queen's like 70th birthday or something. They show the kids giving her presents, and Charles gives her a beautiful, well, it's not probably that beautiful, but it's a painting that he painted of like Balmoral or like one of her favorite places or something. And she's just kind of like, oh, okay. And he's like, but I painted it, Mama. And she's like, nice. And then, and then one of the other weird sons gives her, I don't know if it's the Jeffrey Epstein son or not, gives her a Billy Big Mouth bass, and she and everyone else lose their fucking shit. They start like screaming. They're like, this is the best thing we've ever seen, over a Billy Big Mouth bass that's singing Don't Worry, Be Happy. And I was like, there's no way this is there's no way this is really in the final cut of the show, but it is.
This once again brings about the question, how are the people who are making this show not getting sued like all the time? Like, how is the royal family allowing this to go on?
I think they just don't want to watch it. Like, the impression I get is that like all the young royals, like William and Harry and all them, like I've heard them say that they've seen parts of it, but it's just too weird and painful and like sad to watch. So I wonder if it's just a matter of like none of them are watching it.
Wow. I mean, I'm sure they have like a royal TV vetter who watches TV for them to make sure that it's enjoyable for their majesties. So maybe if someone wanted to complain, they could. But maybe they were busy watching the figure skating. Is that a segue?
I think it might be, yeah.
Let's talk about this event, actually, because so many things happened. It was also the first
event. This event actually is all around.
This event actually is all around.
I feel it in my fingers. No, I won't go there. I know it's the holiday season. I know it's England, but I'll keep it away from the movie we all hate.
Yeah, okay. This was the first event where people started qualifying for the final. We have some qualifiers, and the podiums were very exciting. We're going to start with women, and I'll tell you why. We're going to start with women because when we get to the men's podium, we're going to lose our minds, and we have to be sane for women first. How's that?
We're going to ramp up to it. Yeah, yeah. We're gonna keep calm and carry on until we get there.
Jesus Christ.
Ha ha ha. Okay, so starting with the bronze medal in the women's event was Anastasia Gubanova from Georgia.
Yeah, good for her. I don't have a lot to say about it because she's a fine skater and I hate both of her programs deeply.
Yeah.
It's one of those cases where I'm like, I could stand because you're a good skater and everything is fine. She looked gorgeous for both of them. Both of them, looks beautiful.
So good at like a very, very subtle muted ballet pink situation.
Yeah, she's
flash like champagne.
It's what the kids on TikTok would call ballet core. She very much gives ballet core. It's deeply ballet inspired, or at least her short is. Her short makes her look, the dress for that makes her look like a ballerina in the center of like a music box or a cake topper or something. It's really, really pretty. And I also really enjoyed her dress for her free skate until I realized the music is Slumdog Millionaire, which no white person should be skating to. And the shape of her dress is inspired by a sari. I thought I was losing my mind when that thought first occurred to me. And then I Googled pictures of saris. And not only is it just inspired by the general shape of those garments, it's inspired by, like, the third image that pops up on Google Images when you Google sari.
That's lazy. Which is worse. I will say, I'm pretty sure saris are one of those things that it, like, is legit okay for anyone to wear.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not appropriative. I think it's still kind of messed up for her to skate to, like, that, like, soundtrack. Yeah. It's just like, it's not, I don't know.
I think the combination, I think that's is the like issue. If you're going to like a Desi wedding and you're like invited and you are wearing the appropriate garments for that, by all means. But I feel like just the combination of the music and then the choreo has arms that are, I think when I was tweeting about it, remember Twitter? I think when I was tweeting about it, I said like Arabic vague because I wasn't sure. It hadn't clicked that it's Southeast Asian yet because it was just like bad arms. And then I was like, wait, this is fucking Slumdog Millionaire.
And it, yeah,
just,
I think,
it just developed. It was levels of bad.
Yeah, I think I would be okay with it if, and okay, so like sidebar, I would be okay with it if it was like a Desi choreographer who had picked music that was really authentic and done choreography that was really thoughtful and then like said to Anastasia, like, I want you to wear a sari and do this. I think that would not necessarily make it foolproof because as we know with whatever the hell happened with, was it Landry LeMay, the last one with the weird like, Star is Born, but make it every possible.
That, yes.
Like, had, I guess, a choreographer who was like, sort of the ethnicity of one of the bajillion ethnicities that's maybe being nodded to in that program, doesn't necessarily make it cohesive. But anyway, like, that would be fine. I think, I do want to acknowledge that the choreographer that Anastasia did have was Elena Leonova, who you may remember competed as recently as 4 years ago in that Grand Prix circuit. For Russia before things went absolutely bananas with the Russian women's team. And I liked her a lot because she like wore pants and skated to Zorro as a man. And I just thought that was neat.
Yeah.
So I was disappointed that these were the programs that she was choreographing because her as a choreographer and with a skater as lovely as Gubanova, I was like, oh, that could be a great pair. But
unfortunately, Slavic people, even this is not commentary on like current socio-political anything, Slavic people in general are just like years behind on any sort of smart conversation about ethnicity, race, appreciation, appropriation, who gets to do what and why and how to do it in a smart way. And again, if this is your first episode here for some reason, hi, I am Slavic, so I get to make this judgment. And also, I'm correct.
Yeah, like I imagine, I mean, I can't really speak to what it would be like to be from a country where it's a lot more like homogenous in a way. But like, even then, I mean, we live in a globalized world, so.
Yeah, no, I promise you they did this because they thought it was very pretty and the music was very fun and they were just having fun with it. I promise you there was not a single conversation on whether they should be doing it and if this is the way to do it. I promise you it was just never the level of discussion. And I'm willing to bet like my life savings, of which I have none, on this.
Yeah, I think ultimately that comes down to the ISU dot setting a clear standard of like, I mean, I don't know if it would be as hardcore as like rules, but like every time they ask for feedback, I say like, can you please do some workshops or have a consultant on hand for cultural sensitivity and like make it known to people who are competing at this high level that like these are sort of the things that are industry standard and like, you know, Hollywood and television, which is, again, not perfect, but it's like I would say most Hollywood and television wouldn't be like, let's make a movie about Indian people starring white actors in this day and age. So,
yeah, that's why Scarlett Johansson hasn't worked in a couple of years.
Well, you know what? If Scarlett Johansson can skate, I have some ideas for where she could go with her career and still do that. So, yeah,
she's already played, like, if you look at her Marvel career, she's already very good at, like, playing a Russian super soldier with PTSD. So I have some ideas.
Yeah, and isn't there a lot in the Marvel universe of, like, injecting people with superhero drugs and stuff?
Yeah, no, that's quite literally Natasha Romanoff's, like, entire deal. Truly done open this door because I love Natasha so much. But yeah, she is very much like from like this ballerina super soldier training program. So that's a fun thing for ScarJo to consider. She's also Zionist, so like maybe not. I don't know.
I literally cannot believe. Yeah, we're making jokes and like not to bring in Russia, but I cannot believe. With all of the, like, extraordinarily on-the-nose, cheeky, look at all this, like, very obvious bullshit we can get away with-ness of the Sambo choreography in general, I cannot believe there has not been, like, Sasha Trusova as Black Widow or something. Has that happened? Like, surely it must have. I haven't been paying attention to the fake Russian Grand Prix this year, but, like,
yeah, no, you couldn't
at some point,
pay me too,
but she has, like, dyed red hair, which, like, no shade, so do I now, but, like, it's just so perfect, and the way that they were doing, like, what's the chess show? Queen's Gambit, which is also about a little girl who's addicted to drugs. Like, you can't just, they're so, they love an obvious wink wink. So.
God. Yeah. Also the Marvel, the Marvel soundtracks for most of the films slap extremely hard. So technically, if someone were to do a Black Widow, also the Black Widow movie I thought was fine. It wasn't a masterpiece, but it was fine. There is something to be done there. That's not what Anastasia Gubanova did. If she did that, it would be fine. But she decided to skate a short program called Istanbul Wedding and then a free skate from Slumdog Millionaire. So I have questions.
If you really want to skate to a song about Istanbul, not Constantinople, is right there.
It's right there. I would pop off right extremely there. Hard if someone did that.
I feel like it has happened at some point, but I do need more They Might Be Giants on Ice in general. Just as like a basic, like, Maslow's hierarchy of needs thing.
It's at the top of... At the bottom? What is basic needs? The bottom of the pyramid. It's... You need it to survive.
I want to use this as a segue, and I was going to say I need Isabella Beato and Silver, but I don't, because I like her a lot, and we know this, but I kind of have come around to your point of view. I think I was very, very, very positive about her at her last competition, mm-hmm. and now I am kind of like, okay, it's juniors. Yeah. Like, it's very good, it's juniors.
I just feel like it's very junior. I enjoy her skating.
Yeah.
It is also insane to me that she's the first woman to qualify for the final. Surprise, she is now qualified for the final. I don't connect with it yet. And that's fine, because this is the journey we're going to go on for the next 4 years, God willing. And maybe she's going to do something and win me over. Longtime listeners will remember I had this same journey with Alyssa Liu back in the day, like a couple years ago. I'm just not sold. Also, her free skate, which, again, like the Sasha Cohen reference to, she skated to this song at the Olympics. Also, it's a Russian song. Also, it's a Russian choreographer. How do we feel about that? I don't know. Not gonna explore that.
It has been stuck in my head for weeks.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot get out of my head. Like, na, 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 na. It's a real brain worm.
It is very catchy. It's also very dramatic. And God bless this child. I'm sure she was proud of herself. She could not stop smiling for the entirety of this program, which usually I would find very fun and endearing, because I like when people are having fun doing what they're supposed to. But there was like a broken connection there for me, because the music is so big and she's like, her costume is dramatic and the music's dramatic. And then she's just like giving you, God, it's the same thing as Alyssa back in the day, isn't it? It's just.
Yeah, well, it's juniors for me to be like, it doesn't matter what the music is. I'm going to give you cute girl smile because I'm a cute girl and that's what the people want to see. And that's not on her. That's on like. I think the way that, unfortunately, like, whether it's like dance or theater or any kind of performative theatrical thing like skating, I think that we do sort of give child actors, but particularly little girls, like this idea in their head that like, if you're cute, you just have to smile, smile, smile. And that's like the only thing that matters yep. dramatically. And yeah. I think she's just on the cusp of growing out of that. Like, I feel like I want to be pretty generous with her and say, I'm not feeling it now. And so I don't have a ton to say now, but I really do think I will in like a couple of years.
Oh, yeah. And I'm fully on board to be won over by her. I'm not. Sometimes I decided I'm not going to like someone like as a skater or a performer. And I'm like, I'm going to wait for them to do something that I can objectively dislike. And in Isabeau's case, I'm like, she's cool. I'm just not sold yet. That's fine.
Yeah. And I think like. I've been listening to all of the Grand Prix events. I mean, I've been watching them too, obviously, with my eyeballs, but I've been watching all of them without commentary, or like sometimes clips with like a little bit of Mark commentary. Mm-hmm. But I think that's really like chilled me out on a lot of stuff, because I think like if you listen to like, for example, like American commentary, I have heard is pushing Isabeau really hard, because I mean, like, that's what people do is they push the upcoming star of their fed. Like, I don't.
I feel like that's normal.
That's just what it is. Yeah, it's normal. I don't think it's, like, reprehensible, but I think that, like, there is a certain amount of, like, I feel insane, I'm angry, that comes from being repeatedly told that someone is the best to ever do it, and you're looking at, like, a kid who's not even in the senior level skill set yet. And I think that's also part of why, a very small part of a very big picture of why, like, the whole, like, Kamila thing rankled me so much. But I think, anyone who's, like, really, really, really angrily anti-Isabel, like, she's so overrated, she's so overhyped, it's like, well, she's not if you just don't hang out in the spaces of people who constantly hype her. You know what I mean?
Which a certain billionaire will make very easy for you the second figure skating Twitter dies.
Yeah, and even if it's not Twitter, like, even just try maybe seeking out, like, a lot of the ISU stuff on the YouTube, their YouTube doesn't have commentary, and you can get Opera, which has a free VPN, and just watch it through that. And then you don't have to worry. You don't have to have this experience of, like, I'm aggravated that people disagree with me, because you don't have to actually hear anybody else besides yourself, and it's great.
Wow. You know what I've been doing is, like, a form of self-care, because I have been watching on the ISU live streams, which have been, for the most part, good. Except for, like, minor issues. We didn't have sound for a while in France. I've been popping out the chat the second I open the event, because I'm unfortunate enough to understand enough English and enough Russian to be able to read most of chat, because chat is usually people talking over each other in usually English, Russian, and Japanese, because those are, like, countries or, like, nationalities of people who are very, like, into figure skating, where figure skating is big, where people will sit down and tune in. So
I think those are like, kind of objectively the three biggest feds. Like, I don't think that's controversial.
In terms of like, fan culture, for sure. But I unfortunately can understand most of the commentary that goes on from people. And my God, I have no idea why the ISU still allows live chat to happen. I understand the impulse. They want the engagement and they want to show, like, real people connecting in real time. All of that sounds great. Everyone is so fucking mean all the time. There's people who act like technical specialists, and they will post, like, if someone, like, under-rotates a jump, they'll just, like, post it with the little, like, less than signs. Like, the way it's gonna, like, come out in
Oh, the little protocols. Carrots. Oh, yeah. My God.
And it's like people are auditioning to be commentators the entire time. The culture of it, I want it studied, because it's very, very different from even, like, the meanest parts of, like, figure skating Twitter. It's a very different, honestly, like, more boomer approach to sharing your opinions live on the internet.
And I was going to say, like, I agree with that, but also as somebody who runs live streams of events quite often now as part of my job, it is actually, like, really common for, I don't want to be ageist or generalized, but it's a chat feature on a live stream is actually, like, really difficult for a lot of people of a certain age. And we take it for granted that we could just do it. And so that does make me wonder if it isn't, like, a younger demographic with just, like, a different set of internet social skills.
Yeah, I don't know, because they seem to be very good at doing it right on time, right as things are happening. It's just everyone's very mean all the time.
Yeah, I've never once watched with a chat. I know it would make my blood boil immediately. I can't watch anything on earth with a chat.
Yeah, it makes my blood boil every time. It's people are just mean. However, something that did happen, God, I'm trying to remember. It might have been Luna Hendricks as of time of this event, last event. There was someone who skated, and I glanced at chat for a second, and all of the comments were nice. For just, like, a second before his chat scrolled over again. I think it was Luna Hendricks when she was skating in France. And it was a very nice moment of just, like, oh, this is possible, which was nice.
Yeah, when it comes to Luna, I'm always a little bit like, I want people to love her because she's great. I also want to make sure that when I say like, yay, everybody love Luna, that we're not including like the inevitable weird stragglers who are excited that a white woman is doing well.
Oh, God.
You know what I mean? Like, I think there's definitely invited. Like a weird. No. Yeah, no, 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 no. So that's always my slight hesitation with Yuna. I mean, Luna. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, Luna. Anyway, but like, yeah, she wasn't in this event.
You know who was, though?
You know who was, though?
Fucking my Mihira gold at the MK John Wilson Trophy 2022.
Gold. This is her year, man. Like, she's...
overjoyed.
She's coming off of having once again barely missed the Olympic team, really going out and beasting everything she was assigned to. She looks and skates like she's better health-wise this year. Yeah. I think. I mean, I'm not her doctor. I truly have no idea, but she seems like in slightly better health. If you don't know, like Mai has had a lot of health and injury issues, including what is it, like pediatric arthritis?
Juvenile arthritis.
Yeah, which apparently it sounds like so horrible. It's one of those diseases where it like prevents your body from like absorbing nutrients from food. Like that's so scary.
That sounds so terrifying.
Yeah, so for a while, I mean, I'm not saying this from a point of view of like, oh, like thin people look sick. Like people's bodies are people's bodies, but she looked like she was unwell for a while, and I think she's looking a little healthier now. Like she's got like more color, and again, like whatever. I think it's just complicated to be chronically ill, as the both of us know.
Yep. Hi,
hello, you're listening to this show. You don't look. We never post anything on time because we're both chronically ill, and finding a day when we're both feeling good enough to record is challenging. But anyway, we're just like so happy for her. I love a Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence. Always
me. Too. It is also funny that, and we'll mention that again when we get to the boys, but it's funny that as we like transition into mid-November and Christmas decorations start coming up, there were two aggressively Christmassy programs that happened that podiumed. And that was just funny to me because I think when you make a choice for your programs in like May, it is so funny to be like, I will be doing a song called Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence. People will be thinking of Christmas the second they hear it, regarding of whether they know the song or not. And I am at peace with that. And I think that's a very cool move of her.
Yeah, it will never, ever be Mr. Grinch, which was the ultimate.
God, I miss the Grinch.
Monica Wabe's Grinch was the ultimate, after Christmas, this is no longer relevant and I simply don't care program.
That I simply will continue doing this.
And it was worth it because it reached normie Twitter, like normal non-ice skating fans were like, have you seen this shit? And I'm like, yeah, it's great, yep. Right?
I always love when something is insane enough to reach normie internet in terms of skating programs or like anything skating related. I don't think that Mai did that with her beautiful set of programs, but what she did do was she just was undeniable. She looks like a fairy every time. Both of her, just like the dresses and the choreography is perfect for her. Both of her programs are David Wilson. And it's she's just so good.
She is. It's wonderful to watch her have these like really like overjoyed,
yes,
spectacular reactions to her scores because she deserves it. After everything she's been through, she deserves it. And for all that she's been through, even in her skating career, of being sort of overlooked or like just missing the top spots time after time, it just must mean so much to her. It means a lot to us as fans of her. And I want to say that kind of my running theme with watching the women this year has been like, I am so sick of like floaty fairy ballerina in a music box, bland routines. And Mai is like a masterclass on how you do that genre and make it interesting and unique, yes, and watchable. And anyone who's not doing it like her, I'm like, just sit back and watch. Because this is how you can be like pretty prancing, dainty fairy ballerina girl and still make it like super exciting and engaging.
Yep, I agree. The ISU posted, you know how they do like little articles on the actual ISU website? They posted one about her win, and the title included the phrase, the eternal fourth Mai Mihara finally, like, wins gold. And I was like, this is, first of all, very poetic. Secondly, kind of mean. And third of all, it is correct. She's so often been just slightly off the thing. And it's just, I think everyone, like, everyone watching, and even, like, the other people who are skating there were, like, overjoyed for her and for her to have this moment, which is very sweet.
Yeah, and I think, like, first of all, remember when Shoma was Eternal Silver and now he's world champion? And so I think things can change. Life comes at you fast. Second of all, another running theme that we've sort of seen this season that I want to talk about is, it's, I don't want to say, like, seniority, because that makes it sound like these skaters are getting good scores based on seniority. But what I mean is skaters who've been around for a while, who are kind of veterans of the Grand Prix circuit and the top level competitions for at least 4, 5, 6, maybe even like 8 years, are doing better than they ever have this year. And it's really, really nice to see in a sport where all too often people just sort of peak really young and then get worse and worse until they retire.
Yeah.
I think that that's not a coincidence. I think the raising of the age limit, I think that, you know, Russia not being here, that's playing a huge role in it. But yeah, I'd love to see all these skaters who have been around for a while peaking at what's considered like later in the career and like getting their dues at a time when maybe they thought that it was too late.
Agreed. She, all of the, in the response to her winning and everything, has been so well deserved. I can speak. And it's just makes me happy. Can't wait to see her again. All of this, I hope this is like the start of just a magical season for her. And yeah, I'm just very excited.
I want her and her bestie, Kaori, to be in the final together, because I just think it would be so wholesome. Yes. And they would have the best time.
God, we can't even talk about Kaori, because as of time of recording, NHK is happening and we're in the middle of it. And the short program was stressful. You'll hear
Don't
me talk
even
about
talk
it
to me about
week.
It, because like I have not seen a single spoiler. I cannot, like, I have so much to do today. And then tonight I'm gonna catch up, and if I get spoiled, I'm gonna be mad.
Yeah, no, it was both men and women short programs, NHK, chaotic. Not bad or good. Chaotic.
That is what I heard. It's so funny. I was saying to our friend Maya the other day from Questlade Plans, that I don't mind being spoiled on anything fictional at all. Like, I will most likely forget, or, like, it doesn't faze me at all. But, like, the second I learn figure skating scores, it completely changes my experience of the event.
And yeah.
Sometimes it ruins it. Sometimes it doesn't. But, like, that's the one thing. I'm like, don't ever spoil me on a figure skating event that happened today that I can't watch until later.
I am a spoilers purist. I don't want to be spoiled about anything ever, and it makes my life and existing online very hard, which is why I was up at an ungodly hour this morning to watch said event. That's not what we're talking about right now, though.
You know what? Someone should skate to Ungodly Hour by Chloe and Halle, first of all, because it's a fantastic song. Second of all, because I think it would be a nice tribute to international fans who get up at an ungodly hour to watch skating.
That is so meta. And if anyone had, like, the level of onlineness to make that happen, I would just be so impressed, and it'd be so very funny to me.
I mean, what is skating if not loving the skaters at an ungodly hour? Like, that's what it is.
It is most of what I do. It's so rare for me to watch something not at truly just an insane hour.
Shall we do some quick honorable mentions before we take a break?
Yes.
All right. So, as we said before, we are going to start doing, like, extended honorable mentions as bonus content. We had a little snag with, like, Netta's wisdom tooth thing, and I don't know, we both have day jobs and mental illness, so what are you gonna do? We're combining the French bonus and the English bonus into one bonus episode, and then, so we'll talk more about the honorable mentions from both of those there, but just as a quick... honorable mentions for England. As a little amuse-bouche.
Wow. Young Yu came in fourth which I don't think she expected. I think she was very much like predicted and expected to be somewhere on this podium. And there were just like little mistakes that stopped that from happening. And that isn't ideal. But she, well, was still really wonderful.
Sick, right?
Yeah, she was sick. She showed up and wasn't even sure if she was gonna skate. And then she did, and she did all right.
Yeah, I think it was really just the short that got her. The free, yeah, there were like under rotations and stuff, but she did come in third in the free skate.
Yeah.
So she came back. It just wasn't quite enough. But I mean, like, if God, when I'm sick, I can't even get out of bed. So
yeah, it speaks to like just her, I guess, mental preparedness that she was like, nah, I made it all this way here, I might as well. And she came in fourth, which is not like, it's nothing to scoff at. It's still very, very good.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised they let her skate with a fever. Like, I feel like that's maybe not a good idea,
yeah,
in these times, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, that's not on us to make the call. We're gonna talk so much about this on the bonus ep. Brady Tanell is back. And regardless of how it went, I saw her take center ice and I started weeping. So that's where I'm at personally, is I've missed her and I'm very happy.
Yeah, it was really good to see her back. And we'll dive into that more on Patreon. What else? What else?
Katya Kurakova did very, very good in the short.
She did.
Crazy good in the short. And
I love how Mark is always like, I did hear Mark's commentary for this, and he's so like, she's the crowd favorite. Everybody loves her. She's the star. And I'm like, yes, good, correct.
He also shouted out that people on the internet keep calling her the sunshine of figure skating. And I'm like, yeah, we do, because she is. She's just like the smiliest person. And she just has like such a sense of humor to her. And it's just delightful to see her every time, her in her up dress with her balloons on it.
Yeah. All right, what else?
Alexia Paganini, I just love. I just love her. Anytime she skates, I'm thrilled that she's there. And I'll talk to you more about Alexia when we get into more depth on Patreon. But I just wanted to mention that she's one of my personal favorites. And she continues to be a masterclass in wearing beautiful, vivid color on ice, always.
I agree with that. That is always true forever and ever. Shall we take a break?
Yeah, let's do break.
Welcome to the break.
Welcome to break, everyone. This is going to be a quick one, and it's going to be a PSA from me. Things are weird on Twitter, and that, as of time of recording, Twitter is working and it might stop working because we've once again let a man-child's bullshit go too far. But we're coping with it. And I just wanted to say, because there is a bunch of y'all on Twitter who follow us on Twitter, we're trying to regroup and have people follow us elsewhere. We haven't decided what sort of social media is going to be next for us if Twitter does go somewhere. But we do have a website now. It's icedeeppod.com. And you can find just like all of our episodes there. You can find all of our links for where to listen, where to review, all of that fun stuff. You can also find a newsletter sign up thing. A form. You just give us your email and we can send you things. So once we know where we're going, we can just do like a little newsletter. And also, if anything insane happens and I just need to tell you about it and I can't live tweet, I guess we can send you an email. We promise we're not going to spam you. It's just for communication purposes. Icedeeppod.com. I made the website. I'm very proud of it.
It looks great. And we're also always still on Patreon. That's like another option we've been talking about of like making, I don't know how much Patreon lets you do like free content, but I think they do let you do to a certain extent. So that's another place you could always find us, patreon.com/icedeeppod. That's where all our bonus content is. Nothing about that is changing. And what else?
I feel like that's it in terms of break. Thank you so much for supporting us while Twitter is still around. Thank you so much for engaging with just general life tweeting insanity and shouting out bits that make you laugh. That always makes me happy. And I hope we can continue doing that somewhere.
Yeah, like somehow. truly, who knows how this entire little bit is going to age. But I just want to say, in the event that Twitter does disappear, I am like really sad and I can't think about it because I have like, it's been such a magical experience, like particularly with regard to this show. Like, I feel like we could not have built what we have without it. And the community of people on there is so special. So if you are like one of our Twitter mutuals, like, please try to find us somewhere else because we don't want to lose contact with you because our community is one of the best things about
very
this
important.
Show,
so. Yeah. But in the meantime, we're still there. And also, we have a website now. Should we talk about voice?
On the information superhighway. Yes. All right. See you on the other side.
Welcome to men. Welcome to the best podium to ever podium.
This podium is great.
This podium sparks such joy. Simply in so many ways, I don't even... Well, let's just talk about it. With bronze, we have Shun Sato, who is a joy, and who is the other person I kind of alluded to, because his short program is Carol of the Bells. It's very much literally just a Christmas song.
Yeah, is it... Okay, wait, this is me being, this is what our, like, ask a Slavic person corner. Is that one of those things that, like, has become a Christmas song, or was it, because I know it's, like, a Ukrainian bell carol, was it always Christmas, or was it just originally about bells, and then it became Christmassy?
I'm actually not sure, and that's embarrassing for me as, one, a Slavic person, but also, B, I did this song in choir, 1 year, and we very much talked about the history of it, and I don't remember.
Well, we did it in choir too, but we did the English words, and the English words do say Christmas is here.
Yeah, they
but
do.
I'm sure it's not a literal translation, so I don't know if you know the history.
Hey, I looked it up. It is very much a Christmas song. It was written by the Ukrainian composer Mykola Leontovich in 1914. And it is based on a folk chant, which I'm guessing is not about Christmas. It's actually like the actual folk song is called Shtedry Vecher, which means like bountiful night or bountiful evening. And oh, it's originally a New Year's Eve song. So okay. It is a winter festivities, like, song about bounties and riches and, like, prosperity and all of that.
Well, I would say Shun Sato had a pretty bountiful evening.
Yeah, he did. He did so good. And then his free skate is the Red Violin, which is also wonderful for him.
A lot of, like, violin imagery, because the Carol of the Bells is the... Lindsay Sterling one.
Yeah,
right?
It is.
I was watching it with a friend of the pod, Jules, who teaches like violin. Mm-hmm. And apparently that's like every Christmas, like a million students bring that in and are like, I want to learn this.
I can fucking imagine. That is my personal favorite carol of all time. I love that song in every single version of it ever. And it makes me very happy. And this is probably the reason why this is one of my favorite programs on the circuit so far this season, just because I love this song very much. But I was watching the free skates, and I have to tell you about this, at a birthday party. It was my friend Yana's birthday, and she had all of her friends over at her house. And I made like a passing comment about like, oh yeah, figure skating's happening tonight and I'm not watching because I'm at this party. And some of her friends that I don't know that well were like, no, we want to see the figure skating. And I was like, don't fucking challenge me because I will put it on. And we ended up watching the entirety of the men's free skate as like, honestly, like people were drinking. It was like a rowdy, like birthday party situation. where people are like choosing favorites, just like, you know, like when you watch a sport that you don't know and you're like, I'm going to be rooting for this one. Like yes. The way I watched like the Summer Olympics, people were doing that. It was delightful. But everyone was really vibing with the boys who ended up on the podium. And it was, as it was happening, I was like, I could be being very annoying to those people right now, but also everyone looks like they're having a bunch of fun. And it was just like a nice memory that I was making for myself with my friends and my friends' friends.
I loved all of the videos you were sending me of it, of just people like drunkenly yelling in Bulgarian at the TV.
I will tell you more about that when we get to our silver medalist, because I have a full story about that.
Oh, good. Well, I do want to say Shin Sato is another skater who has had kind of a rough journey.
Yeah.
I believe it was his shoulder that was injured for a long time. God,
yeah, several times, I think. Like, just couldn't get it fixed.
And how the turntables, right? Because when he and Yuma first got onto the senior circuit, even before that, even back when they were, like, you know, older juniors, it was really just kind of, like, the two of them neck and neck, and that was kind of the narrative. Then Shin, you know, gets hurt. Yuma takes the world by storm, ends up on the Olympics podium.
Yeah.
And now Yuma is taking time off for injury, right? And, and now Shin is back in the picture. So, look, life comes at you fast, man.
Yeah, and it's... I'm sure it's, like, emotional and complicated for the two of them, but it's also, like, I guess hopeful for, like, the younger or, like, next generation of Japanese male figure skating, that there are so many young talents that are, like, having those moments in the spotlight, and hopefully, like, everyone gets to be healthy and competing, hopefully at the same time, but it's just good to see, like, the younger talents like thrive and podium at the Grand Prix and all of that is very exciting.
Yeah. And what I found really inspiring was apparently his shoulder surgery was like on the day of one of the men's events at the Olympics. And it was that he was presumably, you know, training his entire young life to potentially be at. So talk about just like the poetic highs and lows of men's figure skating.
Yeah. Honestly, the mental fortitude you have to, like, cope with that, that would make me so, so sad. Like, I don't know how I would recover from having surgery, watching my friends do their thing at the fucking Olympics. I don't know.
God. Well, if you need a cheer up after that hypothetical sad situation in silver... In second place, we have Denis Vasiljevs from Latvia, the first Latvian skater to win any medal at a Grand Prix event ever.
And my very own son. He is actually my son in real life.
Yeah. It's true. People don't know this, but we, you know, not enough people are talking about this.
Not enough people are talking about how this is my son. I've been telling y'all for 4 years. I've been telling y'all since he was wearing yellow pants that this child is meant for greatness, and it's happening, and I'm so happy.
It is, like, yeah, this is another example of a skater who's just, like, thank God, finally getting the recognition, like, just a magical skater in a league of his own in many ways.
His drama, his performance, drama. His hair, the ponytail. His hair.
Engagement with the audience. He's doing unique things. I think his Sting program has really grown on me, the Englishman in New York. I think it went over really great, obviously, and in England.
Yeah. I hate that song. I've never liked that song. It's one of those songs that just, like... I guess the cool kids would say gives me the ick.
It's a little clowny. Don't enjoy that it's a little song. Clown core.
I don't mind clown core in general. there's something about this song that I just can't vibe with. That's fine. But he sold me on it. I enjoy his version. I guess, like, if you have a little Latvian man doing beautiful things, I can be on board with nearly every song.
So it's like Englishman in New York, parentheses, little Latvian man version.
Yeah, Englishman in New York, parentheses, he's actually a Latvian immigrant, parentheses.
Denis's version.
And then I'm at peace with it. Yeah, I think.
Yeah, just like, I mean, I think, you know, like, Dennis is a skater for whom the technical, like, oh, quads or super difficult jumps are, like, not his thing. But, like, I like that we're at a place in either, like, the scoring system or the way the judges are using it where he can still get a silver medal. Because I think we've been saying, like, for what kind of happened eventually with Jason Brown, where judges were finally like, you literally cannot ignore this man, even if he doesn't have a quad. Has everything else in just droves. I'm happy that that exception is being made. And I don't want to describe it as an exception because it shouldn't be, but like that like a mindset of skating is about more than just jumps. And that should be reflected in the medalists is now being extended to people like Dennis. Cause no one in the current competitive field in this circuit is more deserving of that, I don't think, than Dennis Vasiliev.
Correct. Absolutely correct. I'm thrilled that we're at a stage where, well, first, where his own performance levels and like his, he feels secure in the levels of drama he's bringing. He's always been capable of it, but now it seems like he's performing at this level with so much drama and like the conviction to really sell it to everyone. And I think that's why it's clicked, and I think that's why it's working. The story I did want to tell you is, his free skate is Symphony Number 9 by Dvorak. And that is also the music that they use in the Barbie Rapunzel movie for when like there's like this forest chase scene, and it's very dramatic. And my friend Yana, whose birthday I was at, I have this 3-minute video of Dennis Vasiliev's about to win a silver medal at a Grand Prix event. And my friend Yana just describing beat for beat the plot of the Barbie Rapunzel movie. And she's like, oh, this is where they're running through the forest. And this is where this happens. And just like describes the entire film. And then Megan, at this person's 20-something birthday party, we finished watching this event. And we immediately went on to watch the Barbie Rapunzel movie. Because of Dennis.
I have never in my entire life seen a Barbie movie of any kind.
Patreon.com/heistypod, everyone. I'm going to make Megan watch a Barbie movie.
I'll do it for money. I mean,
they're amazing. They're insane, but they're amazing. Like, growing up, I was like, this is the peak of technology and art. And they're amazing because they're like pseudo 3D, like 20 or something years ago. And it was amazing and mind blowing when it was happening. I watched one again last week as an adult. They're insane and very uncanny and kind of unsettling. And you just got to see it. You just got to see it. Everyone, if there is a platform where you can contact us, if Twitter is still a thing, tell me which Barbie movie.
We could do a vote or a bracket or something.
Yeah.
I will watch whatever. I think for me, so my journey with Barbies, I played with them quite a lot, but I am the youngest of two older sisters, and there's a bit of an age gap there, and they had a million Barbies that were all acquired in the 80s, and then I was born in 1990, and so I inherited these, like, 3 or 4 massive plastic Tupperware-type bins, like Rubbermaid bins, that were filled with, like, hundreds of, like, naked 80s Barbies with horrible haircuts my sisters had given them, and then, like, a million stray shoes and, like, all the outfits from, like, this is, like, the Dynasty Barbie. This is, like, the Melrose Barbie. And I had all the 80s stuff. So all my Barbies were very, very, very 80s. I had a few of my own. I got a lot of the athlete ones. I know I had Tara Lipinski. I had all the, like, Olympics ones, very on brand. But then by the time I kind of stopped playing with Barbies, I think that's when the movies started coming out. And so I think that's why I never saw any.
Barbies were very much a status symbol in my youth, because I'm born in 93, but also in Eastern Europe. And it was like freshly out of like socialism times where Western stuff, including Barbies, were not accessible and also like expensive and hard to get, and like not
and Barbie
childhood.
Symbol of like capitalist childhood is like so
iconic. It's very like, it's very much like a thing. I did have a bunch of Barbies growing up because I'm like a 90s child, very much not like of that time, but like of the transition period, as they would call it, and like sociopolitical perspectives. But I never had like a classical, like pink blonde hair Barbie of any kind. I had one of her friends who has brown hair, and she had like a green outfit, and I still have her.
Is she Teresa? Is that Teresa?
I think that she was like a European, like something or other, like it was like a European offshoot. So she was like one of the like NPC Barbies.
I love the NPC Barbies. And I was Barbie for Halloween in sixth grade. That was long after I stopped playing with them. But yeah, and my friend Tatiana was Teresa. We had like a whole gang. It was great.
I remember I had like a bunch of like Barbie like Lego stuff. I had like the little Stacy lifeguard situation where it had like the Lego dolphin with it that I did have. And I had the
Lego Dilf.
Wow, the Lego Dilf. Yeah, it's very important to have the Lego Dilf. I had a Sleeping Beauty Barbie, which I've since gifted to one of my friends who them and their partner collect Barbies. They have like maybe hundreds of them, and they're the kind of people who will look at a Barbie and be able to like date which series of Barbie she's from based on like the face shape and shit like that. It's like
they collect accessories.
They collect everything.
Okay, because we're going to talk about this off air, but my sister just found a perfectly immaculate, completely like untouched Barbie movie theater and Barbie camper van from the 80s.
Oh my God.
So also, listeners, if there's like any 80s toys, we also have found a lot of original Pound Puppies. If there's anything that you collect, like hit me up because we're definitely looking to sell some of this stuff.
No, I literally.
Original Easy Bake Oven. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. This is amazing. But yeah, I gifted them my. Not as exciting, but I give them my Sleeping Beauty Barbie, who is the one who had the mechanism where her eyes are closed, but if you raise her hand to kiss it, her eyes open. And she was very cool, but I was like, I'm never going to like use this for anything. And they were thrilled when I gifted it to them. This is off topic. But you know who else is a beautiful blonde prince?
Oh my God, no, that is so on topic. Daniel Grassel.
You know who's the Lego Dilf of this event?
I mean, his hair is a little bit Lego Dilf.
He does look like he would be. Daniel Grassel, and at me if you can on some sort of social media. Am I wrong, people who've seen Barbie movies? Am I wrong in saying that Daniel Grassel does look like every single one of the princes and every single one of the Barbie movies? They're not always Ken. They're sometimes like random ass princes. And Daniel looks like all of them. He also looks like the first Italian man to ever win gold at a Grand Prix event, which is more exciting.
And I say this with love. I say this with love because you have to know by now that I love Daniel Grassel. Occasionally there is some like locked elbows, straight arm Barbie action. Occasionally there is some like... Well, I'll say the stuff he does with his legs, if you did that with a Ken doll, it would snap clean off. So that's how we know he's human.
Have I ever told you, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry to where this episode has ended up. Have I ever told you that I used to have a recurring stress dream nightmare about Barbies in my childhood?
No, I mean, you've just described them as such a source of joy that it's surprising to me.
I used to have this stress dream where I would be at the top of a hill. And it would be kind of like post-apocalyptic landscape, like deserty Mad Max. But it's the top of a hill and there's wardrobes just like in a circle facing the inside of this hill. Just like basic ass wardrobes. And every night when I had this dream, the wardrobes would just slam open and hordes of nude Barbies and candles would come out and just engage in hand-to-hand combat with each other.
I'm so angry that we went all the way through experimental theater school and you never made this into, like, a weird play with projections. I want to see this so bad. I'm obsessed with this image.
Maybe I'll write it now. There's more to it. There's like a B plot, which I'll keep to myself for now.
Okay, yeah, good. Yeah, like, well, if so you want much. The B plot, go on Patreon. That also kind of was my childhood. I described to you sort of my experience with Barbies. That is just kind of like me opening up the chests to play with all the nude 80s Barbies.
It is just like violent hand-to-hand combat, which is not what Daniel did. Daniel did beautifully. I continue to be so moved by the fact that his short program is a Jason Brown piece. That just makes me weep. The fact that that's a thing is fantastic. He just did good.
He did. Also,
one of the girls who was at the birthday party that I was at, during the 6-minute warm-up, she was like, this one, I'm rooting for this one. And then when it became apparent that he was going to win, she was so happy, which was very, very funny because it was very much the experience of like, I've never seen this sport before. However, this is the one. I love him. He is so special. And she had this journey within like 40 minutes and she was very valid for it.
Yeah, something I see floating around a lot in the like internet fandom spaces is sort of this debate of like, is Daniel really good or is his skating really ugly? And like, are we lying to ourselves by saying it's not ugly or is it just like a different style? And I'm like, all of it can be true. Like,
I forget that not everyone went to experimental theater school.
Okay, but consider, even if you didn't go to experimental theater school, I think there's a lot of cases to be made for like music that is really popular and the singers don't have a beautiful voice. They have a strange, bizarre voice. Like, I don't know, like Edith Piaf has a very strange voice. Bjork has a very strange voice. Like Nick Cave. I'm thinking of a lot of singers who have distinctive voices would not be considered like beautiful in the way of like Celine Dion or Michael Bublé or whatever, but are actually like maybe more interesting to listen to.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, and you can't replicate that. I mean, I kind of put Billie Eilish in that category, even though I think she does have kind of a beautiful voice and she has a lot of range and technique that I feel like people aren't necessarily always giving her credit for, but she does have like a strange voice, Lord, that whole like the original Avocados and Bananas girls. Anyway, I digress. I think that those are voices that are strange and yet like that's part of why it's interesting. And
oh, for sure.
I think there's room for that in this sport. I think that is a niche that Daniel is already occupying. And I think that's something we can like just be chill with if we're not being like weird scolds about it. I mean, it doesn't have to be your thing. I don't actually really listen to a lot of Billie Eilish because sometimes that weirdness of her voice does annoy me. But like, I acknowledge that it's not bad. It's just like interesting.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, it's the whole point of art is that it's subjective and not all of it is going to be pretty and not all of it is going to be for you. But that doesn't mean it's not art. Also, I feel weird getting into this because I've never considered his quality of movement ugly or like bizarre in any way, shape or form, except when he does the weird leggy the spin. But that's like his signature at this point, and I'm at peace with it. But the rest of it, I think, is just very like it lives in a world of like contemporary movement that I'm just at peace with. And I think it works for him. And also, like, he's been working with Benoit for, like, a couple of seasons now. And Benoit's choreography style really lends itself to that sort of, like, more experimental movement as well. So I feel like it's fine. It's fine if they're not all, like, the White Crow or something. It's fine.
Which is funny because didn't he do White Crow?
He did. He did. And that was also fucking weird.
I like his weirdness. I think that it depends on the program heavily, whether the movement style like really gels with it or not. But I think, first of all, he's working with Jason, who is like the smoothest, bendiest man. And I'm like, this is going to be a really cool, interesting direction to push him in. And also, I think that, gosh, what was I going to say? I think that I have thought that his movement style is ugly, but not in a way of like off-putting, in a way of like, you know, remember like on Top Model when there would be like a contestant every season who was like this really, really, really awkward girl who was like extremely nerdy and introverted and strange and walked like a baby deer that like had just gotten legs.
Yeah.
And Tyra was always like, oh, my God, this is what's in fashion now. It's like these awkward, strange, gangly girls who can't walk. This is what people want. Like Daniel is giving that and it's fashion and it's, you know, get a lot of work.
I'm obsessed with the like 2003 sleepover vibes of this episode. We're talking.
No, you can Barbies, tell we haven't really talked in a while. You can always tell when Netta and I haven't actually gotten to talk in a while because it just goes off the rails and we start talking like we're at a sleepover.
Yeah, but it's also just like the topics are very like 20 years ago at a sleepover. But yeah, no, I know what you mean. I'm a fan of his quality of movement either way, and I can't be mad at it. And also, he is also qualified for the Grand Prix final. He's the other person who, with this win, we know he's doing the final. And how exciting is that?
So very exciting. I think it's going to be, I think it's cool because he's not the world's most predictable, consistent skater. And so having anybody who's kind of a wild card in the Grand Prix final is always just like a recipe for an exciting final.
Oh, yeah. And also like having like, quote unquote, the wild card qualify first is kind of speaks to how insane this Grand Prix season has been turning out to be for me personally in a very funny way. I'm
the best way. It.
Yeah, I'm having a great time with the Grand Prix this year.
Me too. Honorable mentions. Koshiro Shimada also did incredibly well and came in fourth.
Yes.
Something Champéry fed the children their French Wheaties and they all just did very well.
And they also had so much fun at this event. Like, if you look at all of the, like, backstage coverage, their little, like, table tennis moments and stuff. It just looked like they were having fun and they were, like, happy for each other. And that's always a good vibe.
Yeah, the only moment of distress, apparently, for Shin Sato was apparently he saw too many sheep and he was concerned. Did you see this?
No.
Apparently, he was driving on the way to the rink and they just kept driving and driving and driving and they didn't see a rank and all they saw were sheep for ages and he was getting really nervous.
That is so funny.
Too many sheep for him, but...
Content warning, too many sheep. What else? Roman Sadovsky continues to play with my frayed nerves. He had a fantastic short program and I was like, did I not fucking tell yo this is the Romsky redemption season? And then... He struggled in the free again. And I'm sure he's tired of it. And my nerves are tired of it. And we're going through it. And that's fine.
Yeah, he's tough and he'll bounce back. And
oh, for sure. He's a fighter and he will return.
He's a fighter and he will return. It's so funny. I saw a lot of people on like Twitter recommending like different sports psychologist stuff to him, and I was like, he's got it. If he wants a sports psychologist, he's probably got one already. Like,
yeah, I hope he does. I hope he's taking care of himself, because I can understand how the trajectory could be potentially very frustrating. But yeah, he's a fighter and he will return.
Also a fighter, Jimmy Ma,
he's been having a very good season, and all of, like, the interviews he's giving and all of that sound like he is in a very good place and he knows what he needs to do. And his training is working for him. And also, I'm getting to the point where I'm very annoyed because a lot of it is, like, this ancient man at 27 years old. And I'm like, he's baby, though. Just, like, let him live.
Yeah, God. What was I doing at 27?
I was doing this. It was the pandemic. I was doing this.
I was in grad school. I was still in school. I was a child.
Yeah, calm down, everyone.
Yeah. And also Tomoki Iwatashi, speaking of child.
Speaking of child, I'm just happy to see Tomoki. I can't talk about him because I've already seen him skate at NHK and I don't want to spoil anything for you, but it's just good to see Tomoki always.
Okay, well, if there's no way to talk about him spoiler-free, then let's just move on. To Plushie Corner.
Oh my god, yay!
I took a few notes. It wasn't, like, totally prolific, but there were a few notable things.
Yes.
Brady got a penguin and some polar bears. I will say there were many bears just in general, and I'm not going to name every bear. That was kind of, like, the vanilla baseline plushie here. Yulia Sauter got something that I still don't really know what it was. I couldn't tell if it was a dinosaur or a unicorn. Could have been both. That would have been a new exciting discovery of a species we haven't seen.
I wasn't sure. I tried to venture a guess that it might have been like a rhino of some sort as well. Something with a horn.
You know what? Rhino is kind of dino unicorn. Like, if we were to chimera that, that's sort of a rhino what that is.
Yeah, shapes-wise, yeah, for sure.
Sidebar, if you guys are into Monster Factory by Justin and Griffin McElroy, the latest episode kind of touches upon that. They do Chimera Land, and it was, like, the hardest I've ever laughed. It's a really good one. Oh, my God.
Would that trigger me deeply?
Maybe. I think it might. The first, okay. like, 10 minutes wouldn't. But then they get into it and it might trigger you, yeah. But maybe not, because they're making a shark man, and I don't know if shark stuff is uncanny for you the way like people stuff is. So Alexia got a frog and cat.
Mm-hmm.
Anastasia Gubanova got a penguin in a sweater and a nude penguin. Which is like, once you introduce clothes, it's very Adam and Eve of like the penguin didn't know it was naked until the penguin next to it got a sweater, you know?
God. Oh my God, the larger narrative there. I don't know how to cope with the morality of nude penguin versus penguin in sweater.
Yeah, much to think about there. Katarina got a yellow chick, a Paddington, a deer owl creature. I don't know what that was. I don't know. What is that called? A deer owl. I don't know.
More.
I don't know why I just wrote and more. That's not helpful for me or anyone. Well,
it indicates that it indicates that she did get a bunch of stuff. So I think it's just a commentary on like the abundance.
The abundance. Yeah. An abundant night. Okay. So Edward Appleby got a Yeti. But in my notes, I wrote Applebussy because that's what apparently I was calling him that night as the gag. And now it's just immortalized forever. So it just says Applebussy, a Yeti.
I know he wasn't in my honorable mentions, but I do want to just real quick shout out this child, Edward Appleby, who was one of the home like host picks. And there was like one of the off-ice interviews with him where he was saying how when he first heard that the Grand Prix was coming to Sheffield, he was like, oh my God, I gotta make sure to buy tickets so I can watch. And then he was one of the people who skated in it, and I think that's very sweet.
That is really, really cute.
Yeah, he was like expecting to maybe have like a junior assignment or something, and then he ended up as a host pick. He didn't know host picks were like a thing. It's very
cute.
Yeah.
Graham Newberry, the other one of the local lads who stopped over on the way from Cheeky Nando's, he received a Shrek, who was another United Kingdom icon.
He sure did, and we all lost it.
He got a Shrek. Tatsuya got a monkey, which I wrote in my notes as monkey because it came right after Shrek.
Oh my God. A Shrek reboot, except Donkey is now a monkey.
Yeah, they never address it. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
He gets recast and, like, don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. Koshiro got a cow and a bunny. Dennis got an otter, which I loved. You love to see.
That is very cute. An otter.
So cute. And finally, Daniel Grassel got a Shiba dog, which we definitely love.
We love a Sheeps.
We do.
That is all of the plushies. I was very excited for the Paddington because you would expect a lot of Paddingtons in England. And for my money, there weren't enough Paddingtons. But I was happy that he made an appearance.
Yeah, you got to have him. He's like the national. He's the president of England.
Yeah, that is
I don't know how anything works. Yeah,
that honestly, is exactly like, it.
Abolish the monarchy and make Paddington the king. That would work, right?
He wouldn't be the king if we abolished the monarchy. But wait, who would play Paddington on the crown?
What?
Like, because we talked about the crown earlier. If he becomes the king, someone has to play him. Are you having a person in a fursuit play Paddington on the crown?
Well, I don't know what's unclear here. The question is like, how would they approach it? Would they put like a real bear and a raincoat, or would like a slash a CGI real bear, or would they do it the way they do in the movie? In which case, he's voiced by like an actor, right?
Yeah. Well, I guess the movie is precedent for how Paddington exists in a live acted world. I just really want him to be a life sized person in a fursuit.
But he can still have, like, all of the crown jewels fit on his weird bear body.
Thank you so much for listening. been our coverage of the MK John Wilson Trophy.
There is no social media.
Social media.
The only thing that happened on social media is that in the last like just final swan song hours of Twitter, as which are still sort of going on, Camden Pulkkinen was upset that they were playing Christmas music in the Cornell dining hall a little bit too early. And you know what? That is a valid complaint.
I disagree. I'm very much in a Christmassy mood. I've been trying to find the time and energy to decorate my house. But it's okay. My son and I can disagree on some things. But no, for real, thank you all so much for listening. We know it's been a weird one, but we hope you had fun with it. We'll be back here next week with NHK. We'll be on Patreon with more of this. And hey, Megan, if people want to check out if the internet still works, where can they attempt to find you?
Okay, so what I did, so I'm still Megan Kelleher 3 on Twitter for as long as that lasts. I unprivated my Instagram temporarily just as like another place where you could go. So that's also Megan Kelleher 3. And then I made a Tumblr, and it doesn't have anything on it right now, but I know that's like another place people are going. So it's just like my Tumblr URL is like, is it, do they do tumblr.com/your thing? Is that how
you
they
can
work?
Do both. Okay. You can do both.
I don't know. Find me on Tumblr. My Tumblr name is just Megan Kelleher, but like no 3. So that's, you got to be careful. There's no 3. It's just first and last name. That's my Tumblr and
real
my avatar.
Real name on Tumblr terrifies me. You're, I mean, so I felt
like
this.
Well, so I felt like I had to, because if this is like my outward facing one, and I don't have my like outward facing Twitter anymore. I don't know. It's literally just the header is a picture of Pusheen playing the clarinet, and that's how you'll know it's me. Netta, where can people find you?
I'm at Netta Marie literally everywhere. So if you just write Netta Marie, it's probably me. I'm still on Twitter. My Instagram is public. I'm on TikTok. I don't post, but you can find me there. That's basically it, I think. I haven't migrated anywhere yet. I'm considering remaking Tumblr, but I was raised on Tumblr, and the idea of having a forward-facing semi-professional Tumblr terrifies me, because that's not how I'm used to using it. So we'll see about that. And yeah, Netta Marie everywhere. And you can find both of us until the end of days at IcedTPod on Twitter. Also, IcedTPod.com for all of your links to everywhere we are. Sign up for our mailing list. People have been signing up for our mailing list, and it makes me just very happy to see that people would like to keep in touch. Maybe I'll start an IcedTPod Substack and just write your love letters. And also we're on Patreon. And the fact that we're on Patreon is how we can keep doing this. It's how we can make a website. It's how this show keeps going on for as long as it's gone on. And Megan, do you want to give me that list of amazing people who we're not losing touch with because they know where to find us?
We have Taylor, Shades. Oh, we have so many new people. I have to actually like look at things. Okay. Taylor, Shades, Boom Boom Ray, Aditi, Rhea, Elizabeth, Zoe, Elena, Skating Diaries, Anna, Mandolin Arts, Lily Putz, Eva, Robin is Trans and Tired, a different Robin, Tracy, Josiah, Sabrina, Linnea, Alina, Kenneth, Rob, Catherine, Margaret, Marjorie, Natalie, Robert, Kate, Skating Scores, Vox Machina, Samantha, Kieran, Barbara, Sunny, a different Barbara, Shoma, Cowrie Supremacy, Samira, Joseph, KM, Lucy, Jennifer, Heath, Jules, Danny, and Jordan.
Thank you so much. It just makes me so very happy that you're around and that we get to make this show with your help. We'll see you next week somewhere. We'll be on the internet.
Yeah, you can't get rid of us.
Yeah, you'll find us somewhere. See you in Japan. Bye.
Bye.